liver, liver. Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. You are tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears, and I am here with, yes, it's Lance in the house tonight.
Woo!
Good evening.
Good evening, Lance.
Yeah.
Good to have you here in January 2018.
Yeah, it's nice.
It is nice.
I haven't done any skiing.
I was going to say. That's why we're on the radio tonight.
Yes.
Yeah, well, great to have you. Last year, we started in mid-January and went all year, so...
Mm-hmm.
Just a couple weeks early.
A couple weeks early, but I'm going to be gone a couple weeks in February. So.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just fine.
Just fine. And great, because Jeff is in there ready to take callers and their questions or comments, and Lance is here to answer. So 527-4868-1866, KVNF Now, worm at kvnf.org. I want to thank Captain Clearwater and Jer for sitting in last week and having a lively conversation.
They had a good conversation. I listened. They had a good time.
Right on. That's what this show is all about.
Mm-hmm.
We hope to have a good time tonight, and it's always great when people call
because
that makes it a lot fun.
Yeah.
So, Super, what have you been up to over the last month?
Over the last month?
Yeah.
Well, the main thing is I pruned my hedge growth, and that's just – it's really – I'm thinning it.
Uh-huh.
And I have this hedge growth, and I don't want to get too thick. And things get lanky, and like I have these Austrian copper rose and Persian yellow hedge rose. These are hedge type rose, and they actually got so thick that they were starting to die.
Oh, really? So they needed room to breathe.
Yeah, so I did that. And the other major thing in there that I prune out is the choke cherries.
So you've got the hedge grove made up of these rose hedges.
There's roses. There's so much stuff in there.
Yeah.
There's Russian carragana, which is Siberian pea shrub. And then there's those roses. There's Nanking cherry, which is a shrub cherry. Yeah. It's a sour cherry. There's lilacs. There's forsythias.
Oh, my goodness.
There's some wild apricots in there. There's some crab apples in there. There's actually, I never planted this, but there's actually a sour cherry, an actual sour cherry. The birds
that
planted
found
it.
Found itself, yeah.
The birds planted it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to think of what else. There's some oak, the gamble oak, the native oak in there.
And how long has that hedge grove been growing?
Let's see. I planted the garden in 87, so 88 or 89 it got planted.
Okay, so well established.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that variety, that sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you thin that out and letting that breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going on with those choke cherries? You were mentioning before the show that you get some poles out of that.
Yeah, part of the reason for thinning them is they actually, and I didn't know this was going to happen until things went along, and they make great bean poles, long, tall. Sometimes they're slightly curved. I use them for my grapevine trellises.
Uh-huh.
And if you get them green and stuff like that, you could actually do bent trellises. You could be quite creative with all that stuff.
So those choke cherry branches are good gardening tools,
and
so to speak.
They're not like willows in the sense that if you use willows and you stick them in the ground, they're going to grow. Well, choke cherries don't grow. They don't grow that way. So you can easily put them in the ground and use them as bean poles or stakes or sweet peas.
Uh-huh, sure.
Peas like poles and stuff like that.
Oh, awesome. That's a great tip.
Yeah.
And what made you put all of those different plants together in a hedge grove?
I like the mixed of it. And the extension server, there is a seedly tree program.
Uh-huh.
You could get those bundles of 50 for a really cheap price.
Sure.
You know, and it was one of those things I really got in the groove, and I planted 150 plants in 2 hours.
Whoa, you went for it.
dug the holes and all, but it's like, no, it's one of those things where I just went for it. And
mm-hmm. Does your hedge grove serve a purpose, like a fencing type thing?
It's a windbreak.
A windbreak, sure.
Fencing, and after it was planted, I realized I needed to put up a game fence. So I put up a game fence.
Behind the hedge grove?
Outside of it, so that the deer and elk and rabbits and porcupines and all that kind of stuff won't eat it. And then the hedge grove got so big that I built the fence again 2 feet farther out. So, and that fence is buried in the ground so rabbits and that kind of stuff can't come in.
Yeah, you got the wire or the fencing going down. How far do you have that going down in the ground?
Six inches.
Wow.
And that's chicken wire, 1-inch chicken wire. And then that's 4 feet high, and then it's stock fence above that. And it goes to 8 feet.
Mm-hmm. And that keeps the critters out?
Pretty much so. The squirrels from time to time find a way, and my electric fence went down. I have electric fence on it too.
Uh-huh.
And so the raccoons showed up. But by that time, there wasn't much left in the garden.
Yeah, this year.
Yeah.
I like that, keeping those.
The birds really like it. And for the past 3 or 4 years, I've had the magpies nesting.
In the hedgerow?
Now, I know lots of people don't like magpies, and they're sort of but what I did notice is they keep all the other birds out, and therefore I get all my little lettuce and stuff like that, which the little birds love to eat.
Right.
They're not there, because the magpies are there.
Yeah, so when the committee is meeting, as Lulu would say, they keep the other birds out.
Yep.
Yeah. How high is that hedge grove?
10 to 12 feet.
Whoa, yeah.
And there's even some eastern red cedar in there. And I went, eastern red cedar doesn't do all that well here. And I've dug these seedlings up out of the ground. And what they end up doing is they get this type of borer in there.
In the cedar?
Yeah, and so lots of branches. And they can also get, hawthorn cedar rust.
Oh, sure, rust.
Yeah, and it's a funny thing, and it goes from the cedar trees. Now, we have Rocky Mountain juniper, but it can get in Rocky Mountain juniper too. But it goes from the cedar trees to the apple or pear or hawthorns.
Oh.
And then it goes back. And what it does to the pears and apples is it's cosmetic. It makes them have a russeted skin.
Sure, I've seen that.
Yeah. And so it's just cosmetic. But anywhere on the cedar tree that it has that little, and it's this gummy, yucky stuff, wherever that shows up, it kills the branch from that gummy thing all the way to the tip.
Oh, wow.
It will kill it. The inside will still be alive.
So do you watch for that when you're pruning?
Cut it out.
Yeah. So all these plants live pretty happily together, close mm-hmm. quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. 527-486-8166 KVNF now. Let's talk a little bit about bushes and trees, because you've been working on some fire blight.
Oh, yeah. I worked on fire blight. I said the heck with it and cut the trees out.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
You just went for it?
Yeah. It just was. No matter what I did, they kept on having. There was a Jonathan apple.
Oh, okay.
And a Grimes golden, which is an old fashioned golden delicious.
Oh, that's
a
shame.
And it's not a. The Grimes golden was a mid season, maybe not late, but a mid season apple that never really got gold unless you let it get really ripe. It was really more of a green.
Okay.
It wasn't a pretty apple, but very good flavor.
How old were these trees that succumbed to the fire blight?
The Jonathan probably came with it.
Oh,
getting
really?
It out of the nursery I got it from. Okay. And I think that the Jonathan went to the Grimes Golden.
Spread there.
And so it's still a little bit in another type of golden and another Macintosh out and the Fuji. And actually, 2 years ago, I cut the Gala down. The Gala's looking really good now.
Oh, good.
Resprouted.
Oh, it resprouted.
Yeah.
So you cut it down and you left what?
I left about 12 inches as trunk.
Okay.
And it resprouted and it's looking really good, very good. And I did that with a pear too that had the fire blight also.
And the pear's coming back?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I guess don't be afraid to go for it. I mean, you got to take it out if it's got the fire blight.
Yeah, you have to be just go for it. And I'll dig those stumps out. I'm not going to plant those apples.
On these apples.
Yeah, I'm going to dig the stumps out.
So, again, you got the one tree from the nursery, and mm-hmm. you think it had fire blight already.
Yeah. They weren't very careful. Yeah, it was.
The nursery?
They're gone now, so it's mm-hmm. Norfolk Nurseries.
Yeah.
And they weren't very careful.
And so how long was that in the ground until you noticed the fire blight symptoms?
4 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Got big enough and started doing that. So, but yeah, it was just the quality of the tree.
Okay. 527-4868, 1-866-KVNF now. Can we talk a little bit about those tools again and some protocol for when you're treating the fire blight?
Oh, the fire blight. But once you see it's there, you need to have a – what works best is bleach or I normally have alcohol, and that's what I had today. I was pruning some trees, and I stopped because I didn't have the bleach. So I stopped pruning because – and it was also getting dark. I couldn't really see exactly where that – I could see that it was fire blight, but not where to cut it.
Right.
And stuff. And you want to cut, you know, 6, 12 inches below the fire blight infection.
Okay.
And you want to sterilize it with some sort of disinfectant, but bleach works the best.
Bleach works the best.
Yeah.
And you do that between each cutting.
Each cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good practice and good advice.
And you can tell if you have it, if you go out there, and there'll be, even though the whole branch isn't dead, but there'll be sides of it where the leaves came out or something, and there'll be this black spot right there. Black right on the node or where where it's going to shoot out. Only that whole thing will be dead. You can actually see it this time of year, and it is black. And yeah.
So now is a good time to kind of check your trees out and see if you've got that going.
Yeah.
Okay. What about watering trees right now? I know a couple weeks ago, Jerry and I were talking about water if you can, and that's what you've been doing as well.
I watered all my perennial stuff, all the apples, all the grapes, all the raspberries, even the flower bed. And the only thing I haven't done is where there's some roses and peonies and stuff like that. And I'll eventually get to it.
Right. You're just making the rounds.
Making the rounds. And then the other thing I'm doing is I hand turn the entire garden. And those clods, normally with the freezing and thawing, they will crumble down to nothing. They're really quite beautiful in the spring.
Giant dirt clod, you mean?
Yeah, giant dirt clods. And this year, because it's so bone dry, they've just turned into
giant dirt clods.
And so I'm actually watering those.
You're watering the dirt clods to help them.
Yeah. And also I had spread sulfur, soil sulfur, and because it's been so dry, it hasn't even broken down.
Oh, goodness. So trying to get that worked in a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. So nothing should be without water right now, really.
Yeah, I mean,
it's everything's needing it.
Mm-hmm.
Usually we've got the ground cover, you know, snow covering the ground by now.
Yeah. I even was hand watering that spinach bed, and then I soaked it really pretty good.
Soaked it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's all on the side of some fruit tree, so got water too.
And that would be a good advice on a fruit tree is to soak it till it's...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially the young ones.
All right. Help them through the winter.
Mm-hmm. I even watered the winter grains.
The winter grains? Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That seems like a little over the top, but I guess
dry. Well, it had half-inch to three-quarter-inch cracks in it.
Wow.
You know, and the rye would have survived. The icorn, not the icorn, the emmer did not. And the emmer, I was told, could be a winter grain, but I think it's really a spring grain. So
That was that ancient wheat grain that you planted. Mm-hmm. That was your first time to plant that?
I planted it before, but in the springtime.
In the spring.
And then somebody said that I could probably plant it as a winter grain, which is planting it in the fall. And I think it was the combination of being so dry, and then it got down to those few mornings. It got, 10, 15 degrees?
Yeah.
And it was bone dry, so they didn't like it. So I'll either replant it with emmer, or I will replant it with some Sonoran white wheat, which is they call it Sonoran white wheat. It actually came over. We talked about this with Sarah Pope from the library.
Right.
It actually came over with the Spaniards into New Mexico in the early 1700s. And the Catholic Church used it to make their white wafers.
Yeah,
that's how it was used.
So that might go in if you decide you don't want to try the emmer again.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The problem with emmer is one of those ancient grains is it has a hole on it, and holes are really hard to get off.
A hole on it? What do you mean?
It has a covering over it.
Oh, a hole, H-U-L-L.
Yeah. And so thinking of that icorn, I got it all cleaned and everything's looking great, except I'm going to have to do that with my feet.
It's got a hole on it, the icorn as well.
Yeah, it's not, didn't thresh out, the hole did not come off, period.
So you've got that all cleaned up all the way down to the hull, and that's the last piece that's left.
And there's probably, God, how much is there? Oh, 15 to 20 gallons.
Whoa, of the einkorn. Really?
Einkorn, yeah.
Well, that came out well. That was your first thing on that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Your first
I've done it before, but it's like, okay, we'll try this again. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm caught up. If I really needed wheat or spelt or something like that, I'm growing a turkey red wheat, which is an old heirloom. It's not the high gluten that they've hybrided everything. It's an
right.
old heirloom one. And if I had needed any of those other small grains, I would have grown those instead of the einkorn. But I'm ahead right now.
You mean ahead just in your supply of what you're storing?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And is that sometimes how you think of things is what you have in the jars on the shelf and what you've got in storage and
yep.
you want to add a little diversity to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I need white wheat, the Sonoran white wheat, and mm-hmm. I need Kamut. But I don't have room to grow both of them. So I'll grow one.
Okay. And it's just going to be a toss-up, just whatever
yeah.
you feel like that day, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what gardening's really
mm-hmm.
about, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Just try it and have some fun with it.
Yeah.
527-4868-1866-KVNF now. You're also cleaning some other seeds.
I'm working on the care crop from last year.
The seed crop.
The seed crop from, it was red core chantenays.
Mm, yummy.
And I'm, you know, it doesn't take that much to do. I'm just sitting there for 15, 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, and I just take the seed heads and I have a bucket there. And
just go at it for a while.
Yeah, and then.
So you're doing that by hand or what's the process there?
You could do it with your feet again, but then they'd be really dirty. Do it by hand, just knocking them out. You get most of the seed head goes into the compost bucket.
Yeah.
And the seeds go down. And then I finally got all these seed cleaning screens. So I have, what, 4 different sizes? It just screens and you just move
them
back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really amazing. And they don't have to be perfect. I'm not going to winnow them, but I'm going to get the bigger, coarser stuff out.
Right, right.
And I'm going to do the big holes first. Maybe 1 or 2 of those. And then the last screening, I'll try to get the dirt out. So I'll use a small screen and keep the carrot seeds in the screen, but I want the dirt to go out or the small dust type stuff.
Right. Kind of like gold panning.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You are meticulous about cleaning, and it's great. I love the way you clean your vegetables and obviously your seed and everything is
mm-hmm. Thanks.
All the way through, follow through.
Yeah.
And I like that. What about the lamb's quarter seed? Because, you know, lamb's quarter being one of those great weeds
yeah.
that we all enjoy eating.
I'll clean those next.
That's next?
Yeah, I'll do next. And actually, lamb's quarter is a really, really good seed to eat. It's quite nutritious.
The seed by itself?
The seed by itself.
Mm-hmm. Does it have a flavor or a taste that
I
you
have
could?
Not grown it. I've just read it, eaten it. I've just mm-hmm. read about it. And especially it's processed with corn. For field corn
uh-huh.
together. You process them together, and it's supposed to be really, really good.
Okay, well, you're going to be munching on that
yeah,
as you
I'm gonna
clean
try
them
it.
Probably. Yeah. How's your popcorn going, your popcorn supply?
Oh, it's really good. Yeah, I got to be careful because it's a popular item.
It's a popular item. Word is out about
yeah.
the popcorn for
yeah.
sure. Yeah, and you have to make that last till...
For 2 years. I think I had 3 5-gallon buckets of it on the cob.
Oh, really?
Plus, I have 68 ears set aside for seed, so there's another gallon of stuff because you only save the middle of the cob, remember?
Oh, right.
So both mm-hmm. ends you got to take off. So.
Right. And you plant that every year, right?
Every few years.
Every few years.
Yeah.
Okay, folks. Every few years only.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but there's some other people growing it.
Same kind of popcorn?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They got the seed and it does really well.
That'd be a great seed
yeah.
to donate to the seed library down
yeah.
there for
yeah,
people to check
it's
out.
It's Japanese white holus, and I've grown it now for over 15 years, so it's well adapted
yeah.
to our conditions here.
Yeah, I like that about seed in itself. I've mm-hmm. learned that from you, that's mm-hmm. one of the
yeah.
great benefits of seed saving,
mm-hmm.
is that adaptability.
It's adaptability, and I'm trying to think, and popcorn... It doesn't have 2 ears. It has up to 5 ears.
Oh, really?
On each stalk. Each stalk. So it's really quite productive, even though the ears are smaller, but, you know, you're getting 5 years.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, especially on good soil conditions.
And it's beautiful color.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great colorful plant there. 527-486-8166 KVNF now, or you can email at worm@kvnf.org. All right, so seed saving, you're winding that up and be working on that kind of through the rest of the winter, just a little bit each night. Got the whole garden being watered and pretty significantly.
Yeah.
And cutting down the fire blight apple trees and prune the hedge grove. And you've also been cutting some apricot trees, a little apricot wound on your...
those branches.
Yeah, they're gnarly.
if you're pruning, this is the thing. You can start pruning, but if you are, if anything, wear safety glasses.
Good idea.
Because those branches, those little branches, and they're sharp because you just pruned it, can hit you in the face.
Okay, so safety glasses.
Safety glasses.
I'm going to write that down.
Yeah.
That's one of those gardening supply tools that I need. Okay, so you can start pruning your normal trees.
Your normal apples, pears. I would hold off on peaches and don't touch the grapes.
And is that because it's not cold enough or what?
Peaches, if it gets too cold, if you do it early, the cold can go down beyond that cut and kill the branch down more.
Okay, so it travels in.
Yeah, it can travel in. Grapevines, if you start pruning grapevines, it stimulates them to grow, and we don't want them to be growing.
Yeah.
So you don't prune grapevines, and we'll mention it later on, but not till April.
Okay. So hold off on the peaches and the grapes.
Yeah.
And we'll probably do a show in late January or about pruning.
Mm-hmm.
Go through those different trees and where to prune and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so got a lot of pruning going on. Man, you've actually been pretty darn busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the weather's been allowing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just outside doing stuff. I'm going to say this, and people think I'm absolutely crazy, but I already have firewood for next year. That's one of the things I've been doing.
Sure. I mean, you're able to do it right now, and so, you're ahead of the game.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, we'll do this now. No cross-country skiing now, so...
Yeah, so you're stocked up.
Yeah.
What about compost? Your compost just sitting out there cooking away?
I don't make compost piles during the wintertime. And you can. Don't get me wrong. It's whatever you work. In fact, most people make piles, and they're a slow pile. In other words, they don't really do extreme heat, and they slowly break down over the winter. And I have a big pile of finished compost that's getting even better. And when I say finished, it's been composted and shredded. And I got a big pile of that. And what I do is I just store all – I have these big bins made out of slab wood and stuff, and they're 5 feet high. And I could probably put 4 to 5 full-size pickup trucks worth of stuff in there.
Whoa.
And then I take my grain water – and all my kitchen scraps are going in there every week, but I take my gray water and throw it on there. And
you don't water it otherwise?
No, just with the gray water. And it's hot. Yeah, the snow doesn't stay long. And what was this fall, this is just made me because I had to take some sod out because it was getting too built up. And it was trying to walk on a slant instead of being flat. So I took it out. And I put that on the compost. All that grass is growing.
Oh, is it really? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That's crazy.
Yeah. So anyway, it's like, okay, well, the birds are having fun in there.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of critters do you have out there right now?
What kind of critters?
Yeah.
Just birds.
Just birds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, since I've gotten 2 puppies, the rabbits have disappeared.
Oh, that's right. Congratulations on the puppies. That's going to be a great...
Yeah.
Interesting summer for you.
Yeah, learning on both ends.
Right,
So anyways, the magpies are around, but it's mainly small birds. And I forgot to mention, I did do the amaranth. Clean that up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just popped in my head because the birds have been pecking through all of that chaff from the amaranth and the pearl millet. Just getting all the what I didn't get out of there. But amaranth, even though it's such a small grain, is actually really easy.
Easy to clean?
It's easy to clean. You thresh it with your feet. That's what I did. And then I might have put it through the threshing machine. And then you run it through screens. I run it through a quarter-inch screen and then an eighth-inch screen. And then I actually run it through a window screen.
Oh, right, way down to the little stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, window screen. And this year, because I had those other screens, I ran it through a window screen that's stainless steel.
And that really took out the...
Yeah.
Yeah, and, really cleaned it up.
And then I'll go and winnow it just one time. And it actually is pretty easy.
And it's a beautiful plant when it's growing. I just love the way amaranth looks. It's mm-hmm. just awesome. And what do you do with that grain after you clean it? Are you making...
The amaranth, generally I put a half cup in my grinder for when I make bread.
Okay.
But amaranth can be cooked just like rice. And it also can be popped in a dry skillet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I haven't mastered that yet.
So
but you need to put a hot, get the skillet hot, and then you put the amaranth on, I think.
Yeah, make sure the skillet's hot before you put it in. And just dry skillet.
A dry skillet.
Hot. Yeah. And you're popping it and...
It will look like miniature popcorn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great. Didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good skill to master.
I will work on that one.
All right. 527-486-8186 KVNF now. I know we're going to be hearing about these puppies during the summer, and that's going to be a challenge in the garden and mm-hmm. see what they like. And
well, the gate will be closed.
Okay.
Young dogs.
There's going to be rules.
Yeah. Right now, it's okay in the garden because there's only one bed of spinach, and I'm okay if they... run through it a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But once March, late mid-March comes, no more dogs in the garden. Not that age.
Yeah. And what are these dogs? Because I know people want to hear.
Oh, it's a heeler, blue heeler mixed with border collie.
Oh, that's a smart little puppy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two puppies, though.
Two.
Brother and sister.
Yeah. And they're already smarter than me. I got to pay attention.
Well, they'll be distracting you for sure.
Yes. Yes.
That sounds super fun. Speaking of seeds, there's all kinds of great stuff happening with seed saving and mm-hmm. seed growing. And there's an event coming up on Garnet Mesa. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Not on Garnet Mesa.
Oh, I'm sorry.
In this area. That has not been decided where they're actually going to
hold
this. It'll be in Palinyo-Hotchkiss.
Okay.
And the sponsors are Voga, the Learning Council, and Slow Food Western Slope, and it's a seed saving workshop. Friday the 30th is just a potluck and a panel discussion, and then Saturday all day is going to be seed saving instructions.
Okay, and this is happening in March, right?
March 30th and 31st.
Okay, so there'll be more information on that to come.
Yeah.
And you're going to be one of the people or panelists that are participating.
Mm-hmm.
That's really exciting. We'll be doing some seed saving shows too, because I always enjoy that. And we can get maybe hopefully Sarah from the library up here and talk about how that program's been going, because she's done a wonderful job down there with that. Also, we were talking a little bit about that CSU research station coming back and the seed production that might be happening there.
Yeah, I talked to Frank Stoneker from Osita Orchards.
Right, right.
Rogers Mesa is going to be running that. And they're still going to be doing studying. It's a research station, so they're still going to be doing tree crops, fruit crops. They're going to be doing grapevines, wine, table grapes, and wine grapes, maybe more into the hybrids because the hybrids grow better here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're hardier.
Hardier, sure.
Let's put it that way. And they're also going to be doing organic seed production.
Okay, so the seed saving thing, I'm loving it, that people are really getting into it, and there's a big interest.
Yeah.
And it's important.
It's important. I know everybody's got to research it. Forget researching it. Just do it.
Just do it. Yeah.
You know, it makes a world of difference.
And so when you're talking about, and that's like encourage gardening, encourage seed saving is part of that, right?
It's part of the whole process.
Yeah.
And it's the part that the seed saving part of it has been taken out over the past 100, 200 years.
Sure, right. We just grow to eat, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, when I first started, I was buying all my seeds, all my bedding plants, the whole thing, and now I direct seed everything.
Wow.
And it's all my own seed.
Yeah, so instead of looking at the seed catalog this time of year, you're looking at what you have on the shelves that you can put back in the ground.
Yeah, I still go through them because I still get them. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, I see something I might want, you know, and stuff. But again, we'll talk more about that kind of stuff. Open pollinated.
Yeah, yeah.
Open pollinated, heirloom, and anything that says PVP on it, has a patent on it.
And you shouldn't be seed saving that.
It's actually illegal. They have a patent on
it. It's illegal. Okay.
Yeah. So.
All right. Good to know. So a lot going on in the middle of January.
Oh, yeah.
Not even the middle of January yet.
Yeah.
And here we are, huh?
Yeah.
So be thinking about a garden because Lance is going to be here from for the rest of the year and encouraging that to go. And now's the time to be thinking about that and planning it out.
Planning it out.
Yeah. Where you want to put your seed part of it, where you want to put your actual stuff you're going to be eating, harvesting for food.
Yeah. As you're out there walking around, things just pop in your head. Oh,
yeah.
I can put this here. Just like I'm going to do that asparagus bed. All the asparagus I'm going to dig up has all been marked.
All ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good time. I guess that's a good thing about this year is you can be out in your yard, in your garden, spotting different things on your trees, where you're going to prune, and things sort of start to take shape for you.
I just wanted to go back last week when Wynn and Jer were on. They mentioned if it's going to be this really dry year, possibly a dry year.
Yeah.
We don't know until we're there.
Right.
But
so far.
Mulch.
Okay.
You got to mulch more on a dry year like this. I know I don't like doing much mulch, but you do mulch. So this is the time to gather up mulch. Gather it up now. Don't wait till it's time to mulch. Gather up the mulch now.
Okay. Get out there and gather it up.
Yeah. The spoiled hay, there's still leaves on the ground here and there, whatever you got. Just I would avoid wood chips.
So build a mulch pile is what we're doing.
Get it ready and stored somehow. Yeah. Even if you do it a bunch of plastic bags, you know, get it somehow.
Right. And then it's going to help retain or keep that moisture in as your plants start growing.
Yeah.
All right. Some good stuff happening there. And great to have you back in the studio.
It's nice. Nice being in.
Yep. And be back next week.
Yeah.
All right. So. That is it for our show tonight. That went quickly, and we will see you again next Tuesday at 6:30 for As the Worm Turns. It's One Woman's Perspective coming up next, and thanks for listening to KVNF.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
A shine to, or who you're about to make a sign to. I gotta get that I love so, the whole little low and low.